Wow. Did you hear what my opponent Brent Jacobson's been saying? He says he's a conservative voice with conservative values. But when he was primarying Republican John Spiros in 2018, he said,
one of those big areas we talked about is transportation. That means you got to look at things like indexing the gas tax for inflation.
And stated,
what I've said all along about the school choice program is this. It's really simple. I am not saying that the program needs to be retracted. All I'm saying, I want the facts from a government entity.
In 2022, he ran against a true conservative in the 29th Senate District and got clobbered. Hey, Brent, politics is supposed to be about service, temporary service, not a career, and Central Wisconsin voters won't be fooled by another lawyer who plays a conservative in this primary either. I'm Corey Sillars, and I'm running for the 87th Assembly District. I'm a blue-collar Christian through and through, and I won't just talk those values, I will fight for those values. If you truly want to stop the left-wing circus and the Uniparty, you need someone who can battle both donkeys and rhinos. Paid for by Sillars for Assembly.
Hello there, and welcome to one, welcome to all, Joe Gigante, regular Joe with you, and this, your Red Right in Wisconsin podcast. Good to be back with you once again, where we talk about all things of great import here in the Badger State. Now, of course, you may have noticed we have an election season upon us. I know we had a primary for the presidential, which was kind of a general election, but believe it or not, here in Wisconsin, we like to do things in like threes. So we have another primary coming, and we have another general election coming. August 13th will be the primary for our Senate race, for our congressional race, as well as our state assembly and state Senate. So it's a very important date, not just because it's my birthday, but in fact, it is my birthday. Not that I expect you to remember or send presents or checks or whatever. No, I digress. No, truly, the most important part about it is it's your opportunity to have your voice heard. Now, with all the weird map changes and all the, you know, when they sold out in Madison, gave Tony Evers his maps with hardly a fight, barely a whimper. But it's kind of turned the state on its nose a bit. They tell us we can hold on to a slim majority. I think, well, okay, aim low. I prefer to aim high. At the end of the day, the decision will be made on the quality of candidates. And in a number of districts, we've had several people retiring. We've seen some conservatives written into more liberal districts, some liberal rhinos written into more conservative districts. It's a bit of a mess. And we're going to try to make some sense out of the nonsense like we always do, which is why joining me today in Studio 76 here for today's Red Right in Wisconsin is one of those people that not only is running, this is what you want, right? Citizen legislators, people that haven't spent their entire career waiting for the day, aiming for the day, yearning for the day that they can be on the public teat and draw their salary from the taxpayers as they play God in some building, whether it's in the state capitol or the U.S. Capitol. Well, that's what you have in Corey Sillars, a citizen that frankly said, you know what? I want this done right, so I'm going to get involved, but I'll let him explain that to you a little more in a moment as he is pursuing the nomination to represent the 87th State Assembly District here in the state of Wisconsin. I got to meet Corey for the first, well, we met, I guess, a couple years ago in an event, but got to speak to you a little more in depth a few, well, gosh, almost a couple months now. It's been time blurs at the WPACA Lincoln Reagan Trump dinner, which you were there, you got to speak at that dinner, got to hear you talk about why you're running, and I definitely want to have you on to be able to share that message with so many in Wisconsin, certainly in the 87th district, but I think it's good for all of Wisconsin to hear. Again, we hear all the negatives, right? We want to hear about the good ones, the good people that are trying to make a difference. And with that, Corey, I welcome you to the show. So first and foremost, let's start out with who is Corey Sillars? You're not a lifelong politician.
I definitely am not a lifelong politician. I am 52 years old. I have two
young,
kids.
52 years young?
No, 52 years young. Yep. I have two kids. One's my son's in high school. My daughter's in college. I started working with my father in construction and his business when I was 12 during the summer in 1993, I should be specific. I started full-time with him. And then in 2012, he retired, and I took over the business full-time in 2012.
So for the past, we're looking at 8 to 12 years now, you've been running this business. Where are you based? It's construction, but what kind of work do you guys do?
I do new homes and a lot of remodeling, and I do repairs, and I have a great list of past clients. And it's been very rewarding, and I enjoy it working with my hands every day. And I think there's just so many people within the new makeup of the 87th that are exactly the same as I am. I understand, you know, who you are and what you do each day, and we both are out there busting our hinders.
Now, in terms of, just for the sake of the 87th, I mean, looking at the two maps, I mean, I don't want to go on a tangent of my frustration over how this was handled, because I think it was handled badly, to put it mildly, how they did the maps. But the 87th was kind of west and north of Wausau, but then now it's going to be south and east. I mean, if you look at the way the map shifts, it shifts downward. I mean, now picking up big part. I mean, you got part of like by Wapaka, Clintonville. I mean, you still have some of central Wisconsin, but it really has shifted to the east quite a bit from where it used to be. And I agree with you that there's, again, every day we call them regulars, right? The merry band of regulars, people that are doing their damnedest to try to make ends meet, try to live the American dream, trying to bring up a family to know and love the American dream, all while we're basically being assaulted on a regular basis by any number of politicians and policies that seem to be anathema to what we stand for. So for you, I mean, as you said, you've been working in private industry your whole life, been building a business. I used to work with an exterior remodeling company, and I agree, there's nothing better than what I loved about it beyond just the work itself was just getting out and meeting everyday people, having those great conversations, meeting veterans, whatever it might be, learning what mattered to them. I think it really helped as I was getting ready to, you know, start doing this show again, to have that connection. I imagine it's similar to you. It exposes you in a very positive way to what's on the minds and hearts of again, everyday regular Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. 2 years ago, I ran as a supervisor for the town of Ramon. Since then, we've become a village. And I just got reelected as a trustee for the village of Ramon. So I'll be starting my third year with that endeavor. I'm also on the WASA school board. So those two things, besides my normal business activities, I get to meet all kinds of different people, and really had been paying attention to government in general and not liking what I see for, the last 25 years. And now, 2 years ago, I decided that's enough, and I need to be engaged, and I'm 52. It's time to do something.
If not now, then when? So, yeah. Now, so you mentioned you're a builder, a father, obviously. You do a lot of this work. Now, by the way, is it big shop? I mean, do you have a big crew, or is this mostly you running things and then obviously picking up, you know, I mean, again, I'm familiar with the construction business, picking up crews as you need to do them? How does this?
I'm tiny.
Well,
I'm tiny because it's me right now. And I have a couple part-time students and two brothers that have worked for me as youth apprenticeship kids over the last few years that come and help me with bigger stuff. And I have a great relationship with them, so I'm very thankful for them.
Now, you say on your literature here, which, by the way, I wanted to mention that because you're not, again, this isn't some massive construction company where you're bored and you're like, oh, gosh, what can I do today? I mean, talking to you when we were together in Wapaka, I mean, it's obvious on a daily basis, even when we were trying to schedule getting you in here to do this, I mean, you're going to this place for a meeting over whether materials or whatever else. Again, somebody that's got their hands literally and figuratively in the dirt, in the sense that, I mean, this is a daily practice for you doing your job. It's this idea of running for office isn't just, oh, I need some other new challenge. It's a sense of obligation, really.
It is. I look at my desire to serve. I wanted to serve in National Guard. I didn't take advantage of that situation. I passed it over. I took the did the business instead, and I have a passion to serve and try to make things right for other people. I'm a small builder. I don't need another thing to do with the list between school board and village and kids baseball games, right, and other family things. I have meetings going all the time. And so I'm willing to be that person that goes to Madison and represents all the other working people like me. Somebody has to sacrifice and somebody has to step up.
And then two kids, and how old are your kids right now?
17 and 19.
So one still in high school, right?
Yes.
And then
son is 17,
and daughter's
19.
So she's okay. So she's in college.
Yep.
Is she local still, or what is
she? Is she's at North Central Tech doing residential design by chance?
Well, look
same
at
thing
that.
That I did.
A little bit of inspiration from good old dad. So,
yeah.
So I mean, again, you have a vested interest that's in the community with what you're doing. I noticed on one of your pieces of material, you have. In order, father, builder, patriot, which, by the way, which is two above where conservative is, and that I don't think that's a bad thing at all. But I want to just get, what does that mean to you? Because language has been attacked desperately in these past 8 years. I mean, really since 2016, 8, 9 years. I mean, for instance, the phrase "Make America Great Again" is now being treated like it's a curse word. And I mean, when you think about what's wrong with the words that you want to make America great? I mean, patriot has now been treated, particularly in the mainstream media, like it's code for something other than, well, patriot. So what does that mean to you when you use that term? What is it you want people to know about you?
The word patriot is the absolute how much I revere our veterans, and especially the veterans that were in combat. My grandfather was in France and Germany, part of the 9th Infantry Division, came home with a piece of German shrapnel in his leg.
Not exactly the souvenir one would hope for.
No, three Purple Hearts, Bronze Star, Silver Star. My dad served 2 years in the 101st Airborne Division during Vietnam. Fortunately, wow. Didn't go. And As I was thinking and considering all of this run and such, it's like, boy, God must really have a plan for me, and this has got to be it, because Grandpa made it through and Dad didn't have to go. I know I work with other guys in the trades, that Vietnam vet, corpsman in the Marines, and he ended up, you know, he was shooting back while he was fixing guys. So that's my basis. And wanting to serve, I got to ride in the M60 tank. Recruiters trying to get me to sign, puts me in the tank. That didn't totally work. But that's where patriot is. Believe in the Constitution, believe in the veterans, believe in the flag. All those things are rock solid, hardcore for me. And the people I've gotten to meet so far in this short campaign that, for the last month, very inspiring. Very much make me unafraid to stand on those principles and just, this is who I am, and I've always been that way.
Well, and I want to kind of go from, what is, again, so we get into the principles, and one of the things that I think makes you an attractive candidate, beyond just, again, you're the outsider coming in, your first foray in any way was on school board just a short time ago, which, again, tracks, right? We had this kind of great awakening, if you will, courtesy of COVID, where people for the first time realized, yeah, maybe these school boards need fresh ideas and fresh faces in it. We need to pay more attention, which tracks again with what you're saying. I mean, you're a father, a business owner, somebody that's engaged. One of the deficits that I think conservatives had to struggle with is because we're family-oriented, business-oriented, we're not professional troublemakers, right? We're not like, oh, what board can I get on? Where can I run for office for this, so I can mess with people's lives? We just want to be left alone, do our thing, raise our kids, have a good life, and then you're kind of drafted into service, for lack of a better way of putting it, by the conditions that surround you. So when we talk about those values and kind of what matters to you, if you would kind of lay that out for us in terms of, you know, whether it's education or how we treat the police, whatever it might be, kind of what are your top priorities as a person who would be serving in the assembly, not only representing the 87th, which is your district, but more importantly, representing the entirety of the state. And I'll just caveat it by saying a lot of people, and I'm sure you understand this, very frustrated where they have people they think are on their side, right? And they go down to Madison, and then suddenly they seem to lose their way. They seem to forget why they were going. So from that point of view, why are you different? What do you stand for?
I have a backbone.
We got to. You have to lift that lumber.
Yeah, exactly. And I can say no. I say no on my other boards. I'm there to adjust the thinking. Say we've been doing, but this is how we do it. No, this isn't. It ain't working, guys.
One of my least favorite phrases. Why, when you say, well, why do we do that? Well, because it's how we've always done it. That's not innovation. That's not a good answer.
Right. We don't move anything forward. And really, sometimes it's about undoing regulation. I want to go to Madison and actually undo stuff. I don't want to go there and necessarily accomplish things by creating some new regulation, some new way to look at the situation. I think we need to calm down on some of our spending. Our spending levels just continually go up. And
in what we're spending on.
Yeah, I mean, what we're spending on. It's like, don't create a new government program then, because you can never like pull it away from people, right? Because then they
once
they
it exists. I mean, for how many years at the federal level have we talked about eliminating the Department of Energy and the Department of Education? But as everyone knows, the minute you create a government program and you fund it, it's almost impossible to get rid of it. But one of the things you would have the opportunity as a member of the assembly, the power of the purse strings. One of the great ways to eliminate these programs, if they won't close the department, you can always just pull the funding. If they don't have money, they can't operate. Is that something you'd pursue in terms of targeting programs, or whether it be a department or a program, things that you find that the money shouldn't be going to, finding ways to build a conservative alliance to defund those programs?
Yeah, I'd be in favor of anything that we would call, you know, fluff. It's extra stuff, things that aren't being run efficiently. Does government really need to be doing that for people? Can't? Is there a separate private organization, maybe a church, that can do that better because of the volunteers and that energy that they bring to doing something charitable? The interesting thing with the way the maps are redone and the idea that you brought up at the beginning that the majority may be smaller, right?
Right.
So now if it is smaller, now guys like me, and I've met a couple other gentlemen the same way, in my thinking, that are hard line, we can say no. Now all of a sudden we become more important because, yeah, you have the majority, but if there's 3, 4, 5, 6 of us and that's the majority you have, now our voice matters, right?
You have leverage.
Yeah, we have leverage. And so then the people in our districts have leverage to demand certain things that, hey, we're not doing that anymore. We don't want to support that anymore. You have to change the way you're writing that bill. We can't spend stuff on that anymore because I'm not voting for it. And are you really going to be willing to reach across the aisle? No, you're going to have to give the other side something even more than what we're probably asking for, which in the end helps the state as a conservative to push us back towards those values.
Which, again, this is I love what you're saying, because really I've talked about this a number of times where there just seems to be this almost fear among Republicans to take it to, I don't want to say take advantage because that's misunderstood, but to use the leverage that exists. We saw at the federal level, right? They wanted this, the Democrats desperately wanted this Ukraine funding. Well, why not tack on HR2, which would have secured the border, shut down the open border on the southern border of our country? Well, if they want it so bad, right, stick it in there, make them vote for Ukraine funding, but also give us something on the border. Instead, they just gave him an up and down vote on Ukraine. They all waved their Ukrainian flags because they forgot they represent the United States or whatever other nonsense went on. But this can be done at the state level as well. There's a number of things. One of the things I know you've spoken of, it's in your literature, universal school choice, which I'm a big fan of. The money follows the decision of the parents where the kids can go. Talk to me a little bit about why that's, again, your kids are older now, but obviously it's a topic that's important to you. Explain, why is that so important and how do you see that benefiting Wisconsinites?
Originally, I felt that the voucher system and school choice really was focused on helping the students, Milwaukee and maybe Madison, some of the areas that were having trouble, right? And the students just aren't performing, and it's just the situation they're in. By having it statewide, it really creates a situation where all of the local districts have to be accountable to produce students. And when the public district, right, loses it to the private school a block away, they're up in arms, obviously, because every kid is
right,
worth
translates
thousands
into dollars.
Of dollars.
Well, not only that, but public schools oftentimes costing almost twice as much as what a voucher costs.
Yeah, right. And so why aren't we doing it in the districts, the public districts, right, in a better, more efficient way? Because the private schools are. And they typically have, right, higher graduation rates. The students are achieving at a higher level when they come out. They might get more scholarships just because of that achievement. What are they doing that we're not in public schools, and how do we adjust that? And by giving the parents the ability to take the money with their student, it creates, in a sense, competition that now the public school has to do better. You have to become more efficient.
Well, and competition breeds better products usually. And I don't mean the kid, because I've been attacked, oh, you're calling kids product. No, the product is the education. And like you said, I mean, if you send a kid that was going in public school and they were on the verge of or failing, and by failing, I don't mean just grade, but they're not learning, they're not coming out proficient in reading, math, I mean, all the very basics of what we need. And you send them to a private school where it's costing the state half, if not less than half. And they're bringing, these kids are now graduating with higher grades, a higher command of the actual information. How in the world can that be a bad thing? How is that? And I think you're right.
Right.
Then you have to ask the question, why is it working here and not there? And there's, I think, multiple factors to that. But at the same token, if these public schools, because they want those students, because like you said, there's money attached to every one of those students, well, then don't you have to compete? Don't you have to offer them a reason to come to that school versus the private school? That they're going to get, so you have to offer a better curriculum. Maybe you have to offer better engage. Whatever the rationale is, but it's the very old principle that where there's competition, you will breed a superior offering in the product. No different than pick anything, right? McDonald's versus Burger King or Pizza Hut. Well, I shouldn't use Shakey's because it doesn't exist anymore. But I'm trying to think of another. I'm not good with the chains of pizza. But Domino's, Domino's versus Pizza Hut or whatever it might be. This is how these companies got better. This is how they, I remember we're both old enough. The 80s, the Burger Wars. Remember?
Yes.
Where's the beef? I mean, it was a great campaign, and it really turned things. On the matter of fact, just because I'm a geek on this stuff, because that was targeted at McDonald's because they had the tiny little hamburgers.
Right.
And so you had the old lady in Wendy's saying, where's the beef? Now, because again, my major was marketing. So what was McDonald's response, by the way? Because when you do marketing, you can either try to build, you've got to be able to answer the challenge. And if you can't be better at something, then what do you have to be? To be cheaper. And so what did McDonald's do? They dropped their prices to their old ones. They started offering the 29-cent burgers again. And it was, again, it was brilliant back and forth. The bottom line, competition breeds a response that the audience, or in this case, your customers, which are your parents and your students, have the chance to excel at. So I think, again, I'm I think it's an awesome piece to be completely in favor of it. Now, you list among your issues, reliable conservative voice, traditional Christian values. I've heard you speak of your Christian faith several times. You mentioned pro-life, pro-law enforcement, and veterans. You touched on the veterans and law enforcement a little. If you will, tell us a little bit about some of these other beliefs. Again, I guess, how does it start, right? Where, if people want to understand what makes Corey tick, did you just look up something like, hey, what are the most popular beliefs that a conservative should have, and you just checked a bunch of boxes, or did it start in a different way to who you are today, how you believe these things, and that motivates you?
Confirmation class, honestly, my kids have done a better job with that than I recall doing. 7th and 8th grade was confirmation for me. Enjoyed being at church, enjoyed being in that situation. When I got married, switched over to Catholic church, it felt, I liked the discipline, kind of, not the authoritation,
sure,
right?
Sure,
authority over you, kind of thing.
Well, but there's a good heaping side of guilt. I say that as a Catholic, so, but yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So, when that happened, when I made that transition from my first family church, I was having struggles and kind of bad struggles some days. And I had a lady asked me just last week, who's my Lord? Jesus Christ is my Lord. And Jesus Christ has saved me. And that was in 08. Since then, religion is paying attention to what you do each day, how you treat people every day, and not just saying it, you're doing it. It's in you. You either feel the Spirit come into you or you don't. One of the groups that I've been a leader of, we do Pledge Allegiance in the prayer. Like, I'm the honorary prayer guy. I do the pledge and prayer each. Unfortunately, I'm one of the older guys in that group. But
I just had that conversation where I'm now realizing I'm getting to be the older guy. All my life I've been used to being the young whippersnapper. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've got 10 to 15 years in most of these people. So
yeah. That's awesome because they look to me in that fashion. Each of my prayers are, I figure it out for that day, right? The Holy Spirit is in me. It comes out when I do those prayers.
So your faith inspires, people know that. Your faith inspires who and what you are as a verse to, again, we see often nowadays, frankly, unfortunately, with people running for office where they kind of, the cafeteria approach of, oh, I'm running for this office. Now I've got to pick, this is what I've got to say I believe in. Whereas what I hear you saying is this is just who I've always been. And, it's kind of like the old, I was country before country was cool, right? This is who you've been. It just happens to be popular at this point.
Yeah, it's really important and that when I talk to people, they bring this, they bring religion up to me. They can hear my passion. They can see it. I am physically moved when I do my prayers. They know that. I've completely lost it a couple of times because I'm just overwhelmed of being able to share that message with the people around me, and they know it. I'm not afraid. I'm just not afraid about it with the stories, again, with people I just met last week. They are doing more incredible things, taking a bigger leap than I am because they're coming from, from their situation maybe isn't quite as great financially as what I've been given by my father and what I've been able to build in the last 12 years. And I just told him, I said, your stories are inspiring and I am unafraid because you are showing me how to be unafraid.
And that's all important. Now, which I especially going into political office, to have that sense of, it's again, to be, the Bible has 365 times in one fashion or another to be not afraid. And that's my slogan of live life boldly. That was the inspiration, but it was twofold, was that fact that 365 times we're commanded in the Bible not to be afraid. But it was also the famous Reagan quote where he said, we don't need pale pastels, but bold colors. And I was just kind of thinking about that one day, talking about it on the air, combining those two. And I literally, you talk about the Spirit moving, I on the spot came up with the to live life boldly. And it just, it actually wasn't even my original slogan for the show, but I found myself saying it more and more, and then everybody kind of expected it. But it fits because that's what it means. It's not this idea of just run around and, you know, yell about things, but this idea that you walk into, if you're armed with the truth, it's not about you, it's about the objective nature of truth. And if that's what you're armed with, then you walk forward boldly and you work it. You defend it, which is a lot of what, and I love that you said earlier, it's not about adding new laws or adding new regulations, but what can we subtract? What can we take away to create freedom? I noticed you said you stand for unabridged gun rights. Tell people what that means. I mean, some may not be completely familiar with that phraseology.
Well, that means that our founding fathers knew exactly what it was to be oppressed, right? That's the very first thing. And you will not take our firearms because in that situation way back, they were oppressed. They were trying to be told what to do. The only way they had to fight back, that government entity was the evil, was the enemy at that point,
the
right?
King.
So the king. And we need to be able to defend ourselves against the government. Now we have a government of the people, but we don't take away the guns because people are human and they make bad choices sometimes. And then all of a sudden we become the oppressed again. So never losing the Second Amendment is it isn't about talking about assault rifles. Why do you need that? It's because
right. Who needs that big of a magazine? That's not even a question.
No, that doesn't matter. Exactly. It doesn't matter. We need that big of a magazine
because you want one.
Yeah, totally. Just because you want one, and it's to keep an equal playing field. Obviously, our military has all kinds of stuff that we can't get as civilians. But we have so many options, and we need to keep those options. And it's not – the gun does absolutely nothing. It's the mind of the person.
It's the person pulling the trigger. No, I fully agree. And I love the way, again, that you get to the bottom of it, which is this idea of leveling the playing field. There's a reason we have a First Amendment, which says we have the right to protest, the right to speak our minds without fear of retribution from the government. And then the Second Amendment says, oh, and by the way, you have the right to keep and bear arms and without restriction to it, despite what, you know, Joe Biden's always out there saying that you can't buy a cannon, which, by the way, you can. We've proved that on the show a number of times. But I just think it's one of those funny things. And there's a quote, we do freedom quotes on our, we have Freedom Friday. And I'm trying to recall, I just did one. And it's so funny because what you said. This is it. It's from Thomas Jefferson. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. Now, again, that was a direct quote from one of the founding fathers. If you didn't say it was Thomas Jefferson, if I just said that on the air one day, there'd probably be a dozen letters to the FCC from all the left-wing liberal kooks that listen to the show claiming that I'm trying to start an insurrection. But again, there's such basic truth in that, and that is where people don't like this truth. The Second Amendment wasn't created so you can go deer hunting. Yes, you can go deer hunting. The Second Amendment was created for that very thought from Thomas Jefferson. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. And that's what this country is about, the liberty, that the government should not be this overarching behemoth that controls us. There's supposed to be a decentralized, small faction that serves the people. And I think with what all you're telling us, that this is a mindset that you understand well and would bring to Madison.
You need to have local control. That's the best government. We do not need to be told what to do, and they hook it with purse strings. They tie it to funding for our schools through school lunches.
They love to hook you on the money, right?
And you got to do this. We're not giving you money. Well, that's why you know, like Governor Walker didn't want to start a program with the government, with the federal money, right? Because now how do I fund it at the state level? Well, we don't want it, right? Most of us, we just want to be left alone and do our thing each day, get our kid off to school and pay attention to what's going at school to make sure they're learning something positive, right? And come home and do our thing, go to our family stuff. And I was more than happy to be in that group and not be involved. But after 25 years of watching, I said, hey, this is enough. I need to do this. I need to step up and put the ideas that I keep hearing over and over from my friends and other people I meet, right, and get that mindset within whatever level of government to change. And that's how we take things back.
Well, now, as we just a few minutes here, but I wanted, you have an opponent in this primary, so it's not, you're not running unopposed. Brent Jacobson, who's apparently a Republican, is also running in this primary. He's the current mayor, if I understand, of Mosinee right now.
Correct.
Just to kind of, for those maybe not as familiar, I don't know, maybe you've heard of him, but you might remember he ran for assembly back in 2018 and lost to Spiros. I want to go on the Spiros thing. I've had some conversations with Mr. Spiros over the years, but Spiros is not exactly a rock rib conservative, so I mean, he wasn't able to prevail there. And then Jacobson ran for Senate against Corey Tomczyk, who I endorsed and good friend and support him greatly, just a wonderful man. Now he's running for assembly again. While he's serving as mayor, I mean, it seems to me like he's just living to run for office. I mean, we look at this, and there's some good people that serve long periods of time in government service. I don't want to take away from that, but I mean, it almost seems like it's just a flip of the coin. Well, which one am I going to go for now? Which is kind of the antithesis of what you're doing. You're saying, hey, I'm, you know, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. I want to play a certain amount of time, and then, you know, I'm going to, you know, the old high school football thing, right? High school football's over now. You move forward. It seems like Jacobson's just consumed with which office can he run for now. And from what I'm reading, he's trying to sound a lot more conservative than he used to.
That is absolutely true. With the research I've been doing, he had a completely different message for everybody back in 2018 when he ran against John Spiros. The idea that, I sure hope people don't have this idea that it's like his turn, because he sure isn't.
No such thing.
Yeah, there's no
turn.
That's
never
no turn.
Worked. They tried to do that back in the presidential elections in the 90s. It never works. There's no such thing. You earn, if you want to be elected, you earn the election. That's the way it's supposed to work. Back in the day, I know on school choice, he favored the DPI, managing school choice, which is kind of the antithesis of why we want school choice. If you want the DPI managed education, stick with public schools. I mean, I know when he ran against Corey Tomczyk, he certainly was not running as a hardcore conservative. I've looked at his site. I mean, he has these basic vagaries of wanting to do this, and he's in favor of that, but no flesh to the bone. I would say, I guess if you, you know, we always do this, if you're knocking on someone's door, you know, to try to solicit their vote, and they looked at you and said, okay, you're running, but so is Brent Jacobson. What would you say if you had 30 seconds to tell them why you're the right choice, why you're the difference, what would you tell them?
Because I feel the hardworking people in the 87th and all across the state, even, we deserve a real, honest, hardworking, blue-collar, Christian Valley, don't-take-no-garbage representative. And that's my message. That's the differentiation between myself and Mr. Jacobson, because I work each day. I'm a hard worker. I understand what the working person goes through, your struggles each day. And I just come from a different background, and it happens to be the background that makes up most of the 87.
Well, and I would just add, you understand it because you've lived it. It's one thing to see it and be like, oh, but I mean, small business owner, father of two, these are all the things you're doing each and every day. Brent Jacobson, different background. My understanding is he's a lawyer. Like I said, he's the mayor of Mosinee.
On county board.
Right. I mean, you know, this is his pathway. But it seems like others that we've heard from recently running for office, that their entire aspiration from childhood has been to run for office. And, I mean, again, not that that's wrong. There's nothing evil about it. But when you have that aspiration and a lack of real-world experience, well, I think that's how we get into the messes we're in right now, whereas we need more people like you willing to step up and make what is an actual sacrifice to take on that role so that you can bring those common sense Christian conservative values back to Madison. As I always tell people from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, you're a pilgrim in an unholy land when you go to Madison. But we get enough pilgrims there, we might even be able to change things.
And that's exactly what these new maps are going to give us the opportunity to do. Because if the Democrats actually pick up a few seats and slim up the Republican majority, leadership has to be responsive to all the members in the caucus then. They don't have a choice.
Yes, and we need new leadership as well. We can I want to have you back. I want to have you back for another one of these podcasts, talk to you more on the air as well about it. But, you know, I would say that not only does it give the chance to have that conservative block that uses some leverage, but, again, we need the end of the status quo in every sense of it, and that gets into even Republican leadership in Madison. There's been people there 10, 20 years, and they haven't made much of the difference as much as they try to brag about it. I'd love to see fresh faces, not only in these assembly seats, not only in these state Senate seats, but in these leadership roles as well. And that's another voice that, you know, when you're sending someone like Corey Sillars to Madison, they're not going to be voting for squishy rhino Republicans in leadership, which I also appreciate. Now, if you want to find out more, go to Facebook, search Sillars for 87th Assembly, S-I-L-L-A-R-S, Sillars for 87th Assembly. Been talking to Corey Sillars. I appreciate you coming in today. Believe it or not, I told you it was going to be like 20, 30. We're way past that at this point. But it was such a great conversation because there's so much to learn about you and why you're doing this. I find it fascinating. I think you're a solid candidate for this role. Certainly, I would be happy to endorse you in this run against Brent Jacobson. I think you are the clear choice for conservatives, and I certainly will make sure that the audience knows that and share what I can about it, and hope you will continue this fight and look forward to celebrating not just my birthday on the 13th, but a victory in your primary for the 87th. Any final thoughts you want to add, Corey, as we wrap things up here?
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to get to talk to you and understand. Just get my message out to the listeners, and so they understand who I am, that I really am who I say I am. And you want an answer, I'll give you a straight answer. I don't talk in circles. I don't have time for that. No lawyer speak. I am a builder, and I talk technical, and we get things done.
Amen. Corey Sillars for the 87th Assembly District. Check him out on Facebook. Look for Sillars for 87th Assembly. You heard it here. Share the news. Make sure you share the podcast with everybody you know in the 87th Assembly District. This is how we make the change. I told you, there's no easy button. Everyone wants it. Unfortunately, it only exists in advertisements for office stores. In real life, it means rolling up your sleeves, digging in, getting your hands dirty, and getting the job done. That's what Corey Sillars has been doing his whole life, and now he's willing to do it here in the 87th Assembly District. He's a good man to support. Check him out. And remember, he can't do it alone. Give of your time, your talent, and your treasure so that he can run this race. He can win it August 13th and take it home in November. And remember, live life boldly. See you next time, everyone.